Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, this is David Cohn. The Michael K. Show starts now. Don't screw it up, boys.
Thank you, Coney, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Thursday, February 24th, 2022. Michael K., Peter Rosenberg. We're apart for the next 3.5 hours, but obviously we're together as well. The other 20 and a half, that's your responsibility. Hope everybody's doing well. I was out and about earlier. It's starting to snow. It's supposed to be a big snow day tomorrow.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, big snow day. So Jody's very concerned about school being canceled, and they do that where we live. If somebody, like, you know, if their nose runs onto the ground, they go, oh, the roads are too slick, and they just cancel school. So we'll have the kids around tomorrow for tomorrow's show. 4 days, that's it. 4 days we have before we have to make a decision on Major League Baseball. They're meeting again for the fourth straight day. But I say 4 days because today's the 24th. The deadline is the 28th. Major League Baseball has set the deadline. And what they did yesterday was they put the screws to the players a little bit more. They said, a spokesman for Major League Baseball said, if we don't have an agreement by the 28th, we are canceling games and we are not making games up. And the reason why that is significant in this, and I'm sure that they're trying to put some pressure on the players, is if they don't make the games up, that's money that the players will not be paid. They just won't. So if they miss a month of the season, a lot of guys are going to lose a lot of money. And the owners, I guess, are trying to make them decide, is it more important to get these concessions that you want that might not affect you directly, or is the money more important? Now, right now, the union seems very sturdy. They seem as if they're very very much behind their leadership. But the players came back with their own threat. And that threat was, if we don't get paid and you don't try to make up the gains, we will not approve an expanded playoff format. Which the expanded playoff format, as far as I know, has already been sold to baseball, has been sold to networks. So that would cost the owners $100 million if they don't get the expanded playoffs that they want. So that's the cudgel that the players have. It doesn't seem like they're making that much progress. In fact, you could say they're taking steps back. And the humbling thing about all this, or the depressing thing, is that they have not even addressed the competitive tax. So that's the thing that's going to be the big holdup, in my opinion, because the owners don't want to go that much higher than what they have. You know, they're at 210 right now for the threshold. I think they've agreed to go up 214, then 216, then 218. Well, the players are asking for 245 the first year. And not only the owners not going up that much with the threshold, but they're also asking for stiffer penalties, where the tax would be 100%, loss of draft picks, the whole deal. Players want that taken out. So they want a higher threshold, and they want lesser penalties than are in place right now. So obviously that is a big, big deal. That's a gigantic deal, and they've got to solve this in 4 days. If it's not solved by the 28th, Peter, I'm sorry, but I don't think I'm going to be with you in Arlington, Texas for WrestleMania. I know that breaks you up. I know it does.
It's not me I'm worried about. It's The Undertaker.
Well, I don't think he cares if I'm there.
I disagree with you. Well, the question is, when it comes to caring, though, is how much will people care about actual games being missed in Major League Baseball. Because if they don't care, Michael, it's a lot worse than people being angry. You would hope people get angry, but the worst thing you could get is people just being disenchanted and not moved at all.
I would agree with you, and that could be a jumping off point for us today. When I'm out and about, at the Elton John concert yesterday, so many people, is there going to be baseball? Is there going to be baseball? Is there going to be baseball? And I always say, yeah, there's going to be baseball, but I don't know when it's going to start. I hope it starts on March 31st. I don't think the entire season is not going to be played. But these two sides, just they seem like they're speaking different languages. So we start with that. We ask you, our listeners, the people that move the needle one way or the other, would you be outraged if there's no baseball? Because the worst thing that you could have is apathy. Because if you don't care, that's not good. And I just think, and even Rob Manfred said this when he spoke a couple of weeks ago, and I'm paraphrasing, that if we have to cancel any regular season games, it's disastrous. And the reason I think that's true, I mean, disaster, your definition of disaster could be different than somebody else's, but you came off a 60-game season because of COVID. You came off a COVID-impacted season last year. You haven't had a real, let's sink our teeth into it, this is the joy of the national pastime season, and this could be it. Nothing else going on. The stage is there for baseball. And if you miss a month, are people going to be upset? Or is it going to be like 1994, where they really needed Cal Ripken Jr. to come back and break that record to bring people back into the tent? And they needed McGuire and Sosa to do what they did to get interest back to the sport. There's so many other things going on in the world, in the sports world. Forget about the serious stuff that's going on across the Atlantic, but
Cal Ripken's not walking through that door.
McGuire and Sosa, that chase has been tainted. I don't know what would bring people back in droves. You would think that both parties, they might be looking at the abyss off the cliff and go, let's not jump. But are they going to Thelma and Louise this and just jump? I hope they don't. I don't have any inside information what's going on. But three owners, including Hal Steinbrenner, who was one of the owners, met with the players today. I think it was about a half-hour meeting, and then they broke off and had separate meetings. So, again, the positive thing is that there's dialogue, but they're taking baby steps right now when they've got to take huge leaps. Baby steps are not going to get done, and some of the baby steps are considered backward steps by the other party. So the owners have given an increase in the minimum wage, and the players want more than that. And I'm not going to go through a whole laundry list of what's going on and what they're falling short on, but they're falling short, both sides. There's obviously a deal there to be made. And here's the frustrating thing to me, Peter. I don't just, announce the Yankee games. You know how I feel about baseball. It's my favorite sport.
You love baseball.
I love baseball. I have for years. And there's going to be
baseball
sometime in this world. So at some point, somebody's going to capitulate, and there's going to be a deal that's going to be done. So why would you waste 2 months of a season or a month of a season or even a week of a season when you know that baseball's not going to be canceled forever? So somebody's going to give at some point. So give by Monday. Who does it benefit? I mean, I know each side wants to exact a modicum of skin from the other side, and each side's looking for leverage. I get it. That's what negotiating's about. But it seems like they are, again, speaking different languages. And that's bad, man. That's just tough. It doesn't seem like they're on the same wavelength. The owners don't want to give back much of what they've gained over the last two collective bargaining agreements. And the players want to get back everything that they lost over the last two collective bargaining agreements. And that's not a recipe for a deal. Listen, I don't take sides on this. I've told you that. But the one thing I have said is that if the players are trying to make it all back, everything they've lost over the last 10 years, that's a deal breaker. They're not going to get it all back. You got to decide what's important now and then attack the other things that are important, the next basic agreement in 5 years. That's it. Because if you're trying to get it all back, you're not going to get it done. They're not going to do it. And there's two schools of thought, too. The owners go, well, we own it. We own the teams. We've given you the infrastructure in order to do what you do. And the players go, well, we are the product. We're the employees, but we're also the product. Without us, there are no teams. And I see both sides. I see both sides. But there's just so much animus between these two sides. They don't trust each other. The players have built up all of this hatred toward the owners because, again, as I've told you over and over, the owners took them to the woodshed for two straight collective bargaining agreements. They got everything that they could possibly want. The fact that the players ever agreed on a tax threshold, I mean, that's, in essence, a cap, which they always said that they would never accept. And, well, they accepted a tax, and they didn't realize what they gave up. That's on them. Now they want it to go away when the owners already said, well, we like how this works. And I get the feeling that there are 29 owners in baseball that just watched what Steve Cohen did before the lockout and the money that he gave Max Scherzer and how he drove his payroll past everybody else. And they need to put some guardrails on him. Because if he's going to spend as freely as he's spending, that's going to affect the entire sport. So I think some of that is this, and that's why I always say that Manfred has a tough job. He's got to get 30 people to agree that this works for them. Now, I wonder if the big market teams like the Dodgers, the Mets, and the Yankees, and you could even include the Chicago teams, they look at what Cohen did before the lockout and go, we can't have this guy have a $400 million payroll. We can't. That's why they've increased the penalties on the luxury threshold. Because they really want to make it hurt if you go over that threshold. Now, for the other owners before Steve Cohen came around, the penalties that were in place actually did stop them from doing it. You could see it. Some teams didn't go over the threshold or reset every now and then so they didn't get the toughest penalties. Well, now they want the penalties tougher, and I almost look at that as a Steve Cohen tax. Steve Cohen owns some of the most expensive artwork in the country.
Okay.
Steve Cohen is a guy, Peter, in his entire life, ever since he's become rich, he gets what he wants.
Yep.
You think he's going to sit back and let a little penalty on a luxury tax threshold stop him? He gets what he wants. He overpays for art. If that's something that he wanted, Max Scherzer paid him $43 million a year. Is that a smart play for a pitcher that couldn't pitch his last postseason game because he was wiped out? And at his age, now he's a great pitcher, and I think the Mets made a good move getting him when you don't even count in the money, but you have to count in the money. I think the other owners are a little bit afraid of what an unchecked Steve Cohen could be. That's why all of a sudden you're hearing about 100% tax threshold. Where if you go over it for a third year, for every dollar you spend another dollar on tax. The Yankees have shown they're responsible. The Red Sox have shown they're responsible. Actually, they've taken steps back some years in order to stay under the threshold and reset the tax. The Dodgers have gone over the tax a lot, but not blown past it like the Mets did. So there's so many layers here that impact the negotiations. The players want everybody to be Steve Cohen. The players want Steve Cohen to run wild and get every piece of art that he wants. The other owner's not so keen on it because although they don't have to spend $43 million to get Max Scherzer, well, all of a sudden, if Max Scherzer's making $43 million a year, the price of pitchers just went up. That's what the players want. Because if there's no threshold that you're afraid to go through, well, the players want that. So there's a lot of dynamics in play, everybody, and they've got to solve all of this in 4 days, 5 days if you include today. Can they do it? I'm sure they can. Will it get done? I don't know. I wish I had the information for you. And will you care?
That's the thing you can't know. is will people care? And I'm obviously biased. You know, I don't think people care that much, sadly.
What?
No, I don't.
No, I think people would care. I'll tell you this. People would care if they don't play baseball this year. I think they'd be crushed. I don't think they would lose their mind if, like, 2 weeks of the season.
No, people will care in mid-April, late April, when it's like, oh, yeah, there's no baseball still. And people start going, really? Wait, what happened to baseball? I was planning a trip. I was going to take my family in San Francisco to go to a game. Oh, wait, there's no baseball. You're right. I think then we'll see it. The question is, you know, if there was even a threat of football not being played, the world would stop. But that's a different animal altogether.
All right, let's see what you're thinking. Let's go to Ryan in Jersey City. Ryan.
Hey, Michael. Hey, Peter. How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. I recently became a Yankees season ticket holder, not the full 81 games, but, you know, it took me a while to get there to be able to afford it. But I just want to say, you know, I'm pretty devastated. You know, first time in my life I have opening day tickets, and I have no confidence that it's actually going to happen. I think that, you know, I know you were talking about how it's better that people be angry than not care, and I agree. But I also think that MLB is in the middle of an insane credibility crisis. When you think about what's happened the last couple of years with how they responded to the Astros crisis, how they responded during the pandemic, how last year was a full season, but they still, you know, had some issues there as well. But yeah, I just want to get your thoughts on that. But, you know, I'm hoping obviously baseball comes back, but I definitely care, and I think a lot of people will be pretty upset if even, you know, it's delayed a couple of weeks.
Well, I think they'd be upset too. I do. To what extent, I'm not quite sure, but I don't think we're at apathy level. I mean, it bounced back from 94, and they canceled the World Series. And they canceled the World Series where the New York Yankees might have been playing. And they bounced back. Now, there were factors that helped them bounce back. Ripken and the attention he brought to the breaking Garrick streak. And then in 98, Sosa and McGuire. But it bounced back. Because once you get past all the detritus of a negotiation, it's still the game you love.
They were also a lot closer, though. A lot less removed from, you know, baseball's glory,
right?
In 1994, we're not, you know, just a decade or two out of baseball's best moment, and so it is different.
Let's go to John in Queens. John,
hey Mike, how you doing? How's everything?
Good. How are you?
Okay, good. Love the show. Watch it every day. And
thank you.
You know, I just want to give my best to Don and hope he gets back soon. Kind of miss him.
Yeah, we do too.
Don't we all?
Mike, I just wanted to say, look, I'm a baseball fan, Yankee fan. You know, I would be a little disappointed if they didn't start the way they're supposed to start. But, you know, my heart tells me that the ball players, it just seems like the ball players are really getting out of control, just spoiled in a sense that they make a lot of money. These guys get, not everyone gets in the millions, but a lot of these guys are getting paid millions and millions of dollars to play a game. How much more do these guys really want? What could they be missing that they could be so selfish about? I mean, even a ball player who sits on a bench has got to be making in the hundreds of thousands of dollars just getting into the major leagues. And I understand that not every guy is talented enough to make it to the major leagues. But I just think that these guys are just getting a little spoiled. I mean, to pay someone $20, $30 million
John, that's a bad argument. They get paid $20, $30 million because that's what they're worth. And you can't say they're spoiled, that they make too much money. What they've seen over this last collective bargaining agreement, I mean, the numbers are there. This is not taking sides. That their slice of the pie is getting smaller, not getting more. So it used to be like 51% went toward payroll. Now it's down to like 48. So the owners have found a better way to run their sport. And the GMs with the analytics, they can get less expensive labor to do the same thing because they have the numbers that tell them that. But please don't. I hate when you throw that, you know, how much money they want. Well, how much money do the owners want? Why does it always fall on the players how much money they want? They want their fair share. That's why I think that their reluctance throughout all the time as a union to have a salary cap, I think it's crazy. If you find a way to exactly know what the owners bring in, and then you get 51% of it, you know you're going to get 51% of it, and it's not going to go down, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. But they don't, that the problem with that is they don't trust the owners with their other businesses to tell them, well, what do you really make? You know, what's really hidden and what's really on the books? Because we used to laugh at the NBA. The NBA has a hard cap, okay? So does football. NBA, you could go over it by signing your own players, and there is a tax for that. But James Harden's next contract, he's going to make $60 million. Nobody in baseball makes that. Max Scherzer's the highest paid player at 43. So we used to think with a cap, you could never really get your true value. James Harden's going to make $60 million a year. Nobody in football makes that. And the football players with a hard cap that you can't go over, they do really well. But I don't think either side wants a cap. Because with a cap, then each team has to spend a certain amount of money. And I don't think the low market revenue teams want to do that. That's when I say there are extenuating circumstances coming to a deal in baseball because everybody has their own agenda. The Kansas City Royals want different things than the New York Yankees and the LA Dodgers do. They just do. They're playing under different rules. In other sports, it's not the same way. That's why in football, you could have a team in Green Bay, Wisconsin. In baseball, you never could. Pick the smallest town in America. Some one light town. Put an NFL team there, it'll be successful. Because essentially, they share everything. In baseball, they don't. So I don't know what the solution is. Smarter people than me, well, I am pretty bright. Smarter people than me have tried, and they're trying right now down in Jupiter, Florida, but haven't been able to come to an agreement to split a $10 billion industry. But do you? It's funny. I don't want to say, you know, one guy's wearing the white hat, one guy's wearing the black hat. And I'm not saying they're good guys and bad guys. But why would John from Queens say the players make too much money? Well, somebody's willing to pay them that. Why they make too much money? Why is that always the fault? I think everybody pictures themselves as a baseball player. Nobody pictures themselves as owning a team. We all play baseball at some time in our life. And we all would say the dumb thing, I would play for free if I had a... No, you wouldn't. If you saw the owners were making a truckload of money, you'd want some of that money. That's what the players want. They want their fair share. Or what they think is their fair share. And the owners, I think, have a right to make money, too. It swings the other way, too. A lot of people always tell you, why can't the owners give the players? Because the owners want to make money, too. They want to make money, too. It's not a crime to want to make money. Both sides. It's a crime that you can't split it. You can't find a way to divide it up fairly that you don't stop the sport and kill the golden goose. Think about it. 1-800-919-3776. Boy, a lot of people want to talk about this. We're here for you. We'll talk Knicks next a little bit later on. We have Mark Messier on it at 4:30. And the great Buster Olney, the champ, is going to join us at 5:30.
That's right.
And maybe he'll have more information if, in fact, the talks continue or they break up at some point before he comes on. So we'll talk to Buster about that. Taking your phone calls next. It's Kay, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
So a guy on Twitter named Mort, sorry for the name, Mort, writes, Yankee boy K taking a swing at Steve Cohen during these negotiations. Season didn't even start yet. He's already unbearable to listen to. Thankful for Don and Peter to balance it out. Well, let me put it this way, you mouth-breathing Neanderthal. I didn't take a shot at Steve Cohen. If I was Steve Cohen, I would do the same thing. I'm saying that, are you such a sycophant for your team that you don't understand exactly what I said? I'm saying that this is part of the issue where owners want to stop other owners from doing things, and then Manfred has to bring them together. You took that as knocking Steve Cohen. The language is new to you, I guess, right? This is a new line. You just get off, what's that thing that they teach the language? Rosetta Stone?
Rosetta Stone,
you just
sure.
got finished with Rosetta Stone in English? I never knocked Steve Cohen, you clown. I'm unbearable. Turn the channel. Go to another place. Listen to music. I'm unbearable. Then you're listening. That makes you not too bright.
There's so many fanboys out there, but not just the Mets, of everyone.
Fanboys.
How am I a Yankees
they
boy?
They only hear what they want to hear, Peter. They don't hear what listen, your objective, did I rip Steve Cohen?
No, not at all.
I'm telling you what the problem is. They don't want to see Steve Cohen spend $400 million a year. They don't want to do that. Because it drives the prices up for everybody. Don't you understand, Mort?
They don't understand. Mort doesn't understand.
Mort. Yankee boy is ripping Steve Cohen. Boy, well, how's your mom's basement treating you? You got the whole bowl of Cheetos out?
No, you know, I threw a Cheeto dust out on Hot 97 this morning.
And what'd they think of it?
Ebro was pretty amused. He had not heard Cheeto dust before.
I'm glad you're bringing our greatest hits to the morning.
Though he also then went on a rant and said he's been listening to ENN and he thinks I need to step up and you need to hold me accountable that I'm not doing a good enough job.
I think he's right.
He thinks there's too much lollygagging at the beginning.
Might be a lost cause, my G.
Tell Ebros that that's part of ENN, the lollygagging at the beginning.
That's what I said. I said, Ebros, hold on one second. I had to talk to you and other you. Chill out.
Wow. I'm glad he's listening. Hope he has a meter. Let's go
cookies.
To...
I don't think he can.
No. Let's go to Mel in New Jersey. Mel?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Hey, by the way, Mike, I heard what you said. I don't think Mort was listening. You know, a name like Mort, you probably don't listen a lot. But, so... <Wow. laughs> so, man, right? Barbers, right? Barbers, they go to a barbershop. You know, the barbershop, they want to make some money. It's not a 50-50 cut, but you understand, like, the barbershop got to pay bills. They give you their platform to work out and everything, you know? So I don't see baseball just disappearing because, you know, there's a lot of money to give up, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know if they exactly deserve a 50-50 cut, but something should be there. And with that being said, though, right, the freaking salary cap, that should be blown away. You know why? Because if somebody is willing to play these players what they want, you know, why would you want to double a tax for them? Why would you want to put a tax on them? Just because you don't want to do that, you know what I'm saying? Then you should get some owners who really want to be owners and play these players what they're worth.
See, but that's kind of not fair, though, Mel, because there's a very rich owner that owns the Kansas City Royals. But the Kansas City Royals can only derive so much revenue from that market. They can't make the same from their television regional sports network as the Boston Red Sox can. They can. It's just impossible to do. And in baseball, they don't all share the money like they do in football. That's the problem. That's the key. So it can't be done that way. And if there were, like, all equal markets, 30 equal markets, big markets, let them spend what they want. Because George Steinbrenner used to spend to the point that his team lost money. There was no tax then. That's why it's funny when people go, well, back in the day, this could never have happened. Back in the day, there wasn't a luxury tax threshold. Now there's it's kind of a governor on spending. And the players agreed to it. And now they're trying to put the milk back in the udder. That's the problem. They agreed to something that they probably shouldn't have agreed to, and they didn't realize the ramifications of it, what a drag it would be on salaries. Now they want to get it all back. One thing I will tell you, though, the players are always talking about competitive balance. Well, if the rich owners are allowed to spend as much money as they want, then there would be no competitive balance. So it doesn't matter. So that can't be exactly what they want. They want to maximize what they can earn. I get it. And they don't want teams tanking because there's teams like the Baltimore Orioles that have a $30 million payroll, and there's teams like the Boston Red Sox that have a $210 million payroll, and the Dodgers have a $240 million payroll. The Mets now with $270. There's a disparity there that you cannot be competitive. Now, you could have the outlier like the Tampa Bay Rays, but you know how good they are to do what they do with the payroll that they have? So if you really want to blow off any kind of restraint and any kind of tax threshold, then competitive balance is not the thing that's really bothering you the most. It's just not. Again, if there are four owners that have $400 million payroll and then the rest of the owners are right around $100 million, you're going to have the same four teams most of the time taking charge. Let's go to Rick in Florida. Rick.
Rick.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, I just wanted to say hi to Don. I hope he's doing better and, you know, hope he's feeling better because we kind of miss him on the show.
We got a good update from Don today. Sounds like things are going the right direction. So we're trying to be hopeful here for a Monday return for Don.
Oh, good. I'm right down the road from Jupiter, and you don't know how much. Right now, I'm nursing a cast on my hand, so I can't drive that far. But I want to jump in my car and drive up to Jupiter, and you know, kind of scream at these guys a little bit and say, "Hey, come on, what's the story?" Because I was telling the person that I was talking to earlier. Every year, my wife and I plan a trip to New York, and you know, stay in Times Square, walk to the subway, go to a Yankee game. I can't do that because I don't know what the hell's going on. I mean, I've already looked at a couple of games, a Cincinnati game on Tuesday night and a Cubs game on a Sunday, but it's going to be difficult to make flight arrangements and hotel arrangements if you don't know.
Well, Rick, I'm curious. If you didn't have the broken hand and the cast on it, you drove down to Jupiter, right? Who would you yell at, the players or the owners?
Well, both of them. I would say, come on, guys, what the hell are you doing? And I mean, this is going on, you know, getting crazy. Like you said before, no one's going to get the whole pot. Well, give a little. I mean, what's important to the players? So say if there's three issues on the table. All right, which one is most important to you? You take it. We're going to take the other one, and then we'll fight over the third one. Well, it just seems like every time this comes around, this is what happens.
I hear you. You're talking about them being honest brokers, each side really wanting to find a resolution. That's essentially, Michael, what I get from him that he's saying. He wants to see two sides who are willing to give a little bit here or there to find somewhere in the middle. Because as I've said, as you know, and I'm far from an expert on this subject. To me, none of the things I've heard you talk about sound like enough of a negotiation to not be able to figure it out. You know, like whenever you're dealing with a contract, Michael, we've had this with job negotiations. You sit down and you are on different sides, and you might want one thing and the company wants another thing, but both of you know ultimately you want the same thing, which is for you to perform and to be happy. How do you get there? Baseball, the owners and the players both want to perform. They both want their league to be happy and healthy. I don't understand. It doesn't seem to me that anyone's putting an aggressive step forward. And maybe the catalyst will not occur until, Michael, missed games are happening. And that becomes a real thing. Because I'm not seeing on either side an aggressive move to try to change this.
Well, I'm sure that if you asked either side, Peter, they'd say they're giving in from their position that they initially started with. And they probably are, but not enough.
Not enough.
Not enough. And I think another dynamic in this negotiation is that there's so much acrimony that each side wants to crush the other side. They don't want to, you know, bend a little on this, they want a flat out 19-0 victory. They don't want a 3-2 victory. It doesn't seem that way. That's eventually what it's going to be. We're going to get a 3-2 game, a 4-3 game, something like that. But I think each side wants a lot. Well, the owners want to keep what they have, and by them increasing the penalties on the luxury threshold, that's the thing. If they don't move off that, I don't think the players will agree to anything, because they know that essentially is a cap. Shame on them for actually accepting it in the previous agreements. They did. Now you're going to get rid of it? It's not that easy to get rid of. The owners have seen life with a guardrail now. They don't want it without a guardrail. But you gave it to them. They didn't take it. You gave it to them. You signed off on it. That's the problem with this. The players realize that they got their backside handed to them for two straight collective bargaining agreements, and now they want to get it all back, and it's hard to get it all back in one negotiation. You know, the owners didn't get to this point by being dumb. They kind of know what they want. They kind of know what they have. They know what's important for them. The players, they have a list of things that are important to them. I wish that the gentleman that called could appeal to them and say, you know, just take one thing off the table, another thing off the table, and let's work on the third. Well, if you ask me what was the most important thing, the thing that I think is unsolvable at this point is the luxury threshold, that the owners don't want to go up more than like $2 million, $4 million the first year. That's not enough for the players. The players want them to go up $35 million and then keep going up each year of the 5 years of the agreement. I don't, you know, when you say, well, there's a middle, I don't know if there's a middle ground there when you're that far apart. I don't know if there's a middle ground because the players want the owners to end up at like 265 for a threshold at the end of this thing. The owners, I think, at the end of the collective bargaining agreement they want to sign, they want to be finished at 220. That's a big difference. So I don't know. I felt pretty good yesterday. You know, they continued to meet, but then when the Major League Baseball said, we're not making up any games because the players want to play some doubleheaders if games are canceled. No, no. There's got to be a ramification to this, the owners say. A deadline's a deadline. We said February 28th. If it's not done by then, we start canceling games and we will not reschedule them. So that's tough talk. And the players came back with, fine, if we don't get the full 162, you're not getting the playoffs. And you would think the players would want it. It's worth $100 million to the sport. $100 million from TV. Mm. But there's so much acrimony. Hey, Mort, how you doing? We'll be back on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Mark Messier, part of the broadcast team, and he will join us at 4:30. Buster only at 5:30. We're talking about the Major League Baseball lockout and how close we are to having the season impacted. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Calvin in Washington Heights. Calvin.
Hey, good afternoon, Michael K. and Peter. How y'all doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. I have a quick point that I wanted to make. See, the situations with the owners and the players, something that stands out to me, the grand prize guy that's going to be a free agent in a couple of years is Juan Soto. Right. A person like him, I would not leave a single dollar in the table for the owners, for the players to get their market the way they deserve. He should push for his market value, which should be 13 years at 450, about that's $35 million a year. That's what Scott Boras most likely is going to shoot for.
I think you're short. He's going to get $50 million a year.
Oh, yeah, correct. So he's the best hitter, clearly the best hitter in the game. So he's going to have to get paid. Guys like Tatis Jr. affected the market. As you've seen, when he signed that contract, players started getting, you know, players like the guy from Tampa Bay got shortchanged. People started getting shortchanged.
Well, not shortchanged. He accepted the security.
Correct. He took his security, but his situation is slightly different than Juan Soto just because the position they play and the shoulder situation that Tatis Jr. has. The difference is Tatis Jr. is the most exciting player in baseball. He's the Patrick Mahomes and Steph Curry in each sport. He's much watched TV. So that's the only problem, that he should have just waited a little bit more. But I just would think players like these guys, like Juan Soto, Vladdy Guerrero, they should just wait and push the market for the players, because you're doing a favor to the owners right now. And especially those two guys, because the positions that they play, it's more of a less risk.
Calvin, I mean, it's everybody's individual decision. I mean, Juan DeFranco grew up with nothing, okay? And they offered him unbelievable security for the next 12 years. Now, is he going to be underpaid? He's probably underpaid for what he does now. But he wasn't going to be able to get really paid for another 5 years. Could break his leg, shred his knee. Tatis has got $340 million, and you're saying he shouldn't have taken it. If you're a young player who grew up in poverty, I'm not saying that Tatis did, his dad was a big leaguer, but if one of these kids grew up in poverty and they have a chance to make generational wealth for the next couple of generations of their family, they should say no. Now, a lot of players do say no. I mean, Soto is repped by Scott Boras. And when you get Scott Boras as your representative, you're looking for the last dollar on the table. So the Nationals offered him a big contract, but they want more. That's their right, too. But don't knock people that take it. That's not fair. Why shouldn't they take it? You know, Tatis taking that deal actually got Lindor more money because Lindor wanted $1 million more than him. And that's probably going to get Correa more money. High tide rises all boats. It's amazing how people squeeze their beliefs into what a guy should do for his money. I don't have a problem with Juan Soto not taking that deal. I don't have a problem with Tatis or Franco taking their deal. To each his own. There are a lot of guys that sign those deals that regret it. They regret it because they continued to play at a high level and they would have made more money.
You have to just get out of your head that all of these guys are lucky to be doing what they're doing. They're not lucky. They're not.
No, they're great.
They're great. Now, they're fortunate that their parents' DNA led to them having the ability they had, all those things, absolutely. But the reality is they decided at a very young age to work harder and sacrifice more than most people will. And now, to the point Michael was making earlier, they hold a certain value. So you cannot try to impart the way you see the world based on the fact that you would do anything to have a job that's seemingly so fun onto the way they should view their negotiation. If that was the case, boy, would I have a quick deal done when it's time for me to renegotiate with WWE. But whatever. Whatever you want. Whatever you want, I'll be there. Of course, that's how I feel in my heart. We all feel that way about things we love. I want to do no matter what. But ultimately, you have to then weigh out what your value is and what you should try to get. And these guys are in a situation where the people who pay them make hundreds of millions of dollars off of that product.
Right.
So they can't just say, I love the game. No, Soto has to make a decision based on what he knows his potential value is. There's really nothing, no wrong way to go about it. I in some ways, I think, Michael, I would take it. You know, you never know what happens in life. Maybe I grab the contract and say, hey, X amount of dollars over X amount of years, that feels pretty good to be locked into. I'll do it. But if you're confident in your body and your ability, I understand not doing it.
Some teams don't want to do it because you can give that guy the contract and all of a sudden his production could fall off the table. But you're going to knock Juan DeFranco for taking generational wealth when he grew up with nothing? He should wait it out so he could help other people's salaries? I mean, yeah, in a utopian union world, that's what you would do, but you also have to live for yourself. And it's not like he took like a terrible contract where he's making, you know, $1 million a year. He's making a lot of money. Would he make more money if he went year to year? Yes. But what if he got hit by a car? Then he wouldn't make any money. So that's what they have to weigh. Gambling, you know what? Soto's gambling.
So
he could fall out of a helicopter tomorrow, God forbid. Then the money's never going to come to his family. It's a lot of money to give up. But again, when you hire Scott Boras, that's the game plan.
Well, for Juan DeFranco's deal is 11 years, 182.
Right.
For those who think that he shouldn't have done that and waited, Michael, what do you think we're talking about, a max that he could have gotten yearly?
Well, he wouldn't get anything yearly for the next 5 years. He'd get two arbitration years, and then he'd get two. They could renew his contract at whatever they want, up to 3 years.
Okay.
So he'd be making nothing, probably $1 million, $1.5 million. Then arbitration, he'd get up there. And then once he became a free agent, if he continues along the path that he's playing at, he'd get $35 million a year. So, yeah, he left money on the table.
So essentially, he could have gambled over the next few years, hope for no major injuries or just downtick in your game.
Right.
And then he could have maybe not doubled his money, but close to it, close to doubling his money.
He probably could have doubled it.
And instead he said, I'll take 182 where regardless of what happens, I'm good.
Now, you could also say Tampa Bay gambled. Because what happens if his production goes way down and he's a bad player? And then you just threw that money away. What happens if he has a catastrophic injury? Then that money is owed to him. It's guaranteed. It's absolutely guaranteed. So it's a gamble on both sides. They're gambling against injury. So I hope Soto realizes the riches that he should get in 2 years. But there are gambles there. I mean, the world, the history of baseball filled with things like this. Turn down this deal, then get nothing. Turn down that deal, then get it's all high-stakes chicken. We'll be back. Mark Messier at 4:30 right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
I went to the China Club once, all right? And they had a fundraiser. So I bought a couple of, like, it was raffle tickets. And I never went back. I used to hang out at Blondie's, and the China Club was right around the corner. And one day, somebody from the China Club walks in. He's got a leather jacket for me. I won one of the raffle tickets. And you know what it was? It was a leather. It was the eight ball jacket that Putty wore at in Seinfeld.
Is that true?
Yeah. It wasn't that, but that everybody was wearing this jacket then. And I said, well, this is unfortunate. I'd never wear this. So I kept it in my closet. I don't even know where it is now. But my one trip to the China Club, I got some leather. Not the kind I thought.
Excuse me? By the way, I'm looking at some of these stats because it's interesting to think about, you know, Ovechkin potentially catching Gretzky. And he truly is one of the great goal scorers of all time at this point. I mean, you could argue he's the best. He's in the conversation. But, Michael, the points list is really the one that Gretzky has no shot at ever being caught on.
He's Babe Ruth.
The points one, 2857. Second place is Jágr, who we already know played for a million years and made it to 1921.
Good year.
No one is close.
What a team that Oiler team was.
What an unbelievable run. Anthony, is Joe Thornton still playing? Yeah, Joe Thornton's still playing, but he's like my age. And he's the closest active player at 1535, like half of Gretzky's points. It's insane. He did things that are just absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
He was solid.
Let's go to Richard in Long Island. Richard.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I was reading where Beltran has come on board as probably one of your announcers. Have they announced another one yet?
Yes, Cameron Maben.
Cameron Maben?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
You got it.
That was it?
That was it. I will repeat what I said on Twitter, and boy, I got an incredible amount of likes, which is not why I put it out there. I did the audition tape with Cameron Maben. So we sat in a studio in Stamford, and we did the first three innings of a Yankee-Met game from last year. And after three innings, that's all they wanted us to do. I put down the headset, Peter, and I turned to Cameron. I said, you're going to be a star. He said, what? I said, no. You're going to be a huge star. People are going to be shocked at how good this guy is. The first time you ever put on a headset, Peter, totally natural, funny, engaging, handsome, current. You know, he just finished playing last year. Young, he's 34 years old, going to be a star. Star.
Well, I mean, the only reason I would say people are not going to be surprised is that when you hear, it's so random to hear that Cameron Maben.
Right.
My only real knowledge of Cameron Maben is remembering that he was one of Charlie's favorite players.
That's right.
Yeah. The only reason you wouldn't be surprised is because to see him in the booth is so random.
Right.
You know, he was not a star for this team by any stretch, right?
He had a very good year for the Yankees, one of the best years of his career, but he's there on his, you know, on merit, not because of his connection to
right.
the Yankees. And boy, I was blown away by how good he was. And that's an audition tape. Now I didn't do an audition tape with Beltran. I don't think he did one. I think he's going to be very, very good too. I can't speak to how great I think he's going to be. I can speak to Maben because I worked with him. And it was stunning how good he was, the stories
also,
he told.
And I was going to say, the knowledge that he's going to have of current baseball, Maben played for since 2007.
Everybody.
Detroit, Florida, San Diego, Atlanta, the Angels, the Astros, the Marlins, the Mariners, the Yankees, the Cubs and the Mets. I mean,
yeah,
Michael,
he's covered it. He's got a lot of uniforms.
So imagine the amount of personal stories he has for so many players and insight on managers and coaches. It's very cool. Congrats to him, man.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. He seems
how many
like
games is he doing?
I think it's around 40. You know, again, we talked about the media and getting things wrong or slant. This was just wrong. David Cone's doing the same amount of games he's always done except for last year. We all did more games last year after the 60-game season. David, although he's going to be on Sunday Night Baseball, is doing the same amount of games on Yes. Paul's doing the same amount of games. Kenny is retired. Flaherty's doing the same amount of games. And then we've added Maben and Beltran. Great booth.
And he did bat in 82 games for the Yankees in 2019. He batted .285 that year.
Do you know, Peter, he could have had so many jobs. There were teams that wanted to hire him on their coaching staff immediately. That's how great he is with other players. People just, that year with the Yankees, people loved him. I mean, he was like an integral part of that team. You know, he was the guy who hugged everybody. That was his thing. And he was tremendous. And I think that left a lasting impression on a lot of people. And there were a couple of teams that wanted to hire him as a coach, and he just didn't want to do that at this point. He's just 34 years old, Peter.
Yep. Good for him, man.
Yeah.
Does he live here now?
No. No, he does not. Lives, I think, in North Carolina, I think.
Okay.
But I'll obviously be invited down to his place. And
of course you will.
I'll tell you about it. 1-800-919-3776. That's the number. Buster only will give us an update on what's going on in the baseball talks. And Jesse Rogers, who's covering the baseball talks down there in person in Jupiter, just tweeted out, talks are over, news to come. I think talks are over for the day. So once Jesse gets that out, we'll get it right to you. The Nets start their second half of the season tonight against the Celtics. We'll talk some Knicks as well. It's Kay Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This.
is the Michael Kay Show.
Mark Messier, this Ranger team, is it surprising to you that they have been as good this early?
Well, I picked the Rangers to win their division this year. I like a lot of the moves that they made in the offseason. I think everybody is recognizing that Shesterkin is a superstar in this league. You got a Norris Trophy winner on defense. They're starting to remind me a little bit of the team in 94 with Richter and Nett and Brian Leetch on defense. And of course, they got some skill up front, and then they supplemented them with some guys that can play a hard, grinding, heavy game, and they're an easy team to like. I love watching them play. I love Gallant and the job that he's doing. They got great energy, it seems, when you watch them. They seem to be playing for each other, and there's a lot to like about the Rangers.
The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, let's talk some basketball. The Nets and the Celtics tonight, and I said this yesterday, and I truly believe it.
Go ahead.
If the vaccine mandate is lifted and Ben Simmons eventually gets back on the court, now, from what I'm hearing, Kevin Durant will get back before Ben Simmons actually plays. But when they have their full allotment of players, I frankly believe they're the best team in the NBA. What are you, crazy? Well, yeah, I'm crazy for a lot of reasons, but you look at them from 1 to 15, not just their starting five, which is pretty special, 1 to 15, a really fully loaded bench that gives Nash so many different things that he can do. I think that once they get the whole thing rolling, they're the favorites to win the NBA title. And, you know, that's just coming up the top of my large head. But Jay Will, who certainly knows more basketball than I do, this is what he said on KJM today.
The benchmark is numbers have continued to decrease in New York City, and it's looking like we're trending in a direction where, you know, things will be back to somewhat normal in the next 2 weeks. And I think Kyrie Irving will be in a full-time capacity for the Nets. And what that does, Kevin Durant is able to come off this knee injury healthy. That, to me, makes him the clear favorite to win the whole thing.
The clear favorite, Peter? I don't even think it's close. And people might say, you're crazy, the Bucks. And I will always say this about the Bucks. Bucks deserved that championship last year. It was a noble ride to the title. But with 1.5 of the big three, James Harden playing on one leg, they came within an inch of beating the Bucks. The Nets did. That's with Kyrie Irving out and the fact that Kevin Durant wears a shoe that's a size too big, because that's what he's always done. If he actually wore the normal size, his foot would have been behind the three-point line, and we might not be talking about the Milwaukee Bucks as a champion. So they did that with 1.5 of their top stars. Now you're going to have full Kyrie, full Simmons, full Durant. Then you're going to have the auxiliary pieces, which do such a good job. Drummond is so much better than people give him credit for. He gives the Nets rim protection along with Aldridge, and he rebounds with anybody in the league. They just have to build him up that he could be the starter for them and play starter minutes, because that's not what he was doing in Philadelphia. And I think they'll get there. They have a good performance staff. And then the people off the bench, and you know, you got the Patty Mills and you got the Seth Currys. This is a really, really, really good team. And barring an injury to one of the three when they all get back playing together, I think they're going to be NBA champions.
But as I say to you all the time, you're right, Michael, but the if is so big in the Nets, if they are healthy, that if is so monumental that it almost nullifies the entire thing. And I know that may seem unfair because this is now a different group. You have Ben Simmons there. You don't have James Harden. Kyrie Irving, we would imagine, would come back and be completely focused and unlikely to have any reason to miss games. But for whatever reason, you know, 16 total games together make me feel like a healthy and active Nets big three is not a thing you can even count on.
Well, that's a fair point. But can you count on James Harden being healthy for the Sixers? That's the team they're going to have to beat.
No, you can't. But I wonder, that Sixers team didn't, they did lose things this year, but they didn't lose Ben Simmons this year. They've already lost Ben Simmons, right? So that Sixers team can compete even if they don't have a fully healthy James Harden. We'll see what they look like. The Milwaukee Bucks, I think, will get better and better as the year goes on. And I think they'll be at their best by the time the season ends. It appears the Celtics are moving that direction. You can always count on the Miami Heat by the time we get to when it matters to be a tough out. So,
and the Bulls?
The Bulls are phenomenal. Very solid team. And let's be honest, the Cavs are no pushover.
I think the Cavs are a real good team and they're only going to get better. I don't think this is their time.
I don't think so either, Michael. But if you had a, let's say, Kevin Durant-less, like a Ben Simmons and Kyrie Irving-led Nets team, Michael, could that team win a championship? I actually believe it could. But would it? I don't think so. I don't think they'd win the conference. I'm not saying they couldn't compete for it, but I don't think they'd do it without KD.
If the season ended today, which it's not going to, it'd be the Nets against the Heat. Actually, they're in a play. They'd be in a
play-in.
They'd
be in a play-in game against the Raptors.
Right, right.
They'd have to play a game in Toronto.
Yeah, that's why they got to get these guys on the court so they could do some winning. They got to move up. They don't want to do – because anything could happen in a short series. Anything, even on a great team. A misstep, a twisted ankle, whatever. And they might not get out of the play-in.
Well,
they got to get to at least the sixth seed.
Well, and by the way, that's why tonight's a big game, actually, and it's unlikely that they can compete with Boston in this moment. But, Michael, that Boston is currently who they'd be trying to jump in the sixth slot.
Right.
So tonight could cost them a full game. The Celtics are already 2.5 games ahead of them to avoid the play-in game. So assuming the Celtics, who are 9-point favorites tonight in Brooklyn, win, now you're looking at that number being 3.5 to catch the Celtics.
Now, this was interesting. I was reading on ESPN.com. So there was a report yesterday on a podcast that Andrew told us about that Curry and Drummond really were not close with Simmons. They didn't like Simmons' act. But Curry told ESPN after the shoot-around today for the game about Simmons having to apologize to his teammates with the former teammates with the Sixers. He said, "Business is business. I said from day one, even when he was out early in the season, people were asking me if I feel like if Ben comes back, should he apologize to us or whatever. I understand the business. He doesn't need to apologize to anybody. When he's on the court, I know he's going to do his job. He's going to do what he does. So I understand the business. He was doing what he felt was best for himself, business-wise and personal-wise." Now, I'm going to disagree with Curry. If he was out because he didn't want to play for the Sixers anymore, and it wasn't because of any mental issues, then it's not business. Then he quit on his team. That's not business. He's got a contract. He has to live up to his contract. That doesn't fall under the heading of business.
Okay.
That's you being petulant that you don't want to play with Joel Embiid because he said nasty things about you at the end of that playoff series last year. That's not business, Seth. Now, the mental aspect, that's also not business. That's a medical issue. And if he couldn't play because of that, then he doesn't have to apologize to anybody. But if he just backed away and he wanted to play for another team, I think James Harden still has to apologize to the people of Houston and his teammates. And I think James Harden has to apologize to his Nets teammates because that's not business. If you're out of your contract, if your contract's over and you go somewhere else, that's business. If you're in the middle of contract and you dog it, that's not right. That's not business. So, I mean, maybe Seth Curry's trying to make it easy for Ben Simmons, but that doesn't seem like business to me. On either side. So if he quit on his team, that's not business. And if he couldn't play because of his mental health, then that's certainly not business either. So Seth is wrong on both counts. Both counts. Now, let's talk a little about the Knicks. The Knicks say that Derrick Rose could play tomorrow. Could play. Looks like they're going to start Burks at the point. And then obviously yesterday's news with Kemba Walker asking to walk away from the team for the rest of the year. Very odd. Still no clarity on it after reading through everything I could get my hands on. You know, who asked what? What good does it do? And, you know, right now the reason the Knicks didn't just release him is because he's an asset. Because at the end of this year, he's an expiring contract, which in the NBA, strangely enough, is considered an asset. Now, let's see. Jesse Rogers has just chimed in.
Okay.
And a three-word tweet, Peter, about the talks that just broke off. It's not good.
That's why they pay you the big bucks, Jesse.
Well, I'm sure he'll give us more, but he just wanted to get out right away. It's not good.
Give me more.
That's all we got. But we'll get
well,
back.
Well, no, we have
it.
More.
You do?
The union moved a little towards the league on draft order and service time manipulation, but the day ended early because the sides had nothing more to discuss, according to sources. They stink.
And they still haven't talked about the tax threshold, competitive balance tax. That's going to be the toughest thing to solve. So 4 days in, they haven't even touched on that. That's the thing that's going to break the camel's back. Anyway, we'll get more into the baseball with Buster. He's going to come on in about 15 minutes, so stay tuned for that. So that's the Knicks situation right now. Now, Brian Windhorst was on with Bart and Hahn, and he actually said that the Knicks are better off than they were 2 years ago. Now, I would agree with Brian, but they're not better off than they were last year. Here's Brian Windhorst.
They're not, and that's because the number one priority when Leon Rose took over, in my view, and I think it was probably high up in their view, was to develop the young players that they had on their roster so that either A, you would create a star, or B, you would develop players that could be traded for a star. The path forward for a New York team is to leverage its desirable location into being able to get star players. And you do that by building up the trade assets. And so they talked to like 7 or 10 candidates. And it seemed like everybody knew that Tibbs was going to get the job. But they did talk to some coaches that would have been development coaches. And they hired a coach who is an instantaneous results coach. And they got instantaneous results. But they haven't got development. And I'm sad to say that I think a year ago I thought they were on the path. But now I feel like they're farther away than they could have been from being in position to trade for stars. Because they're, with the exception of R.J. Barrett, their young players have not increased in desirability in the league.
Well, Quickly certainly has taken a big step back this year. I don't think Obi Toppin would bring much on the trade market. The only guy that I think there are two people that would be desired. Well, Mitchell Robinson, but he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. I believe that R.J. Barrett and Julius Randle could get you something. But can they get you something that's going to make them better? I think R.J. Barrett could make you get you something that makes you better. I'm not sure if Julius Randle can.
Well, of course, if you're moving one of those guys, well, you're moving one of the good pieces this team actually has.
That's why I revisit what we said yesterday. Make the move. Roll the dice, take your chance, go to New Orleans and go, what do you want for Zion? What do you want? Tell me what you want. And then talk. Then talk. Interesting stuff. But we'll see, and we'll see what lineup he runs out there without Kemba Walker to worry about. We'll see. And by the way, can we have some love?
I love.
For Fordham, the Fordham basketball team?
Oh, the Ramilly.
They are now a 500 team. Now, that might sound silly to a team, you know, a guy who roots for Duke or a gal that roots for Duke. But for Fordham, it's monumental. And no less an authority than our basketball prodigy who started with us, John Rothstein, said that Kyle Neptune should win Coach of the Year. First year at Fordham. Done some job. And one of his best players just up and left about a month and a half ago. Just decided he didn't want to be here. They regrouped, and they're pretty good right now. I might have to wear a Fordham sweatshirt in the next couple of days on the air.
You should.
You think so?
I think that would really help. I mean, you are a prized member of the Ramilly.
You know, you make fun of the Ramilly. What was there a Terrapin Lee? There's nothing you could do with a turtle.
What do you mean there's nothing you can do with a turtle? Of course there is.
Yeah, okay. Can you come up with something as clever as Ramilly? No.
Fierce turtle.
You see how Anthony Pusick was dressed yesterday?
Head to toe.
Looked like Fordham threw up on him.
Head to toe Ramilly.
He had Rams sweatpants, a T-shirt, a sweatshirt, Ram underwear.
Is that true?
Yeah, he's got quite the Ramilly.
I didn't know you saw that. Wow.
Yeah, I did see it.
That's something.
I missed nothing. Nothing, I said.
Slightly disconcerting if you're Anthony, but it's okay.
Disconcerting, not concerning.
I thought the T is pronounced like an N.
No, not in this case.
Got it.
Jeff Passan has rung in about the meetings. Meetings are done. Progress was minimal. There are 4 days left for MLB and the MLBPA to get a new labor deal, or regular season games are going to be canceled. They've had 4 days to move, and there's been next to nothing, just incremental, and that's that. Evan Drylik, who's been doing a very good job covering for The Athletic, goes MLB and MLBPA plan to meet again tomorrow, fifth straight day. MLB did not react well to the players' proposals today. Once again, like the three preceding days, today brought no substantive progress.
Sad.
Well, you know what? I was thinking, I was driving around today, Peter.
Yeah.
Like, if there's a long stretch without baseball, I think what we should have is that you and me and Don should each day pick a segment of a song and sing karaoke.
Pick them.
I like that.
I know that. The first song, I'm gonna channel Helen Reddy, the first song I do, Little I Am Woman.
Wow, that's where you want to start?
We have to be outrageous. We can't be predictable. So you can't do hip-hop. You might do Carpenters or something like that.
Why don't we do, instead of that, why don't we pick an old game that already happened in baseball history?
Right.
And the three of us start at the same time and do play-by-play together.
Sort of like a bizarre mystery science theater?
That's right. Yep.
Well, you and Don had your chance at play-by-play last year, and that was not good.
I thought it went fine.
Really? That's what I'm hearing from the powers that be.
Really? You heard negative. I want a quote and a name. I want attribution, and I want a quote.
I can't, and I won't. Let's go to Mike in New Jersey. Mike.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I'm 69 years old. I've been a baseball fan all my life. In fact, I was a veteran of the game in 2018, Michael.
Okay, great.
But anyway,
cool.
I'll have to tell you, I'm starting to get tired of the game. I'm starting to get tired of the shenanigans. I don't want to go to a game anymore. It costs $1,000 to go.
Wait a second. Well, are you a fan of the Yankees or the Mets?
Yankees.
They're $20 tickets to Yankee games. How could you say it costs $1,000?
Well, I like to sit in my seats, Mike. I'm sorry.
I feel for you, Mike, but if you want to sit in those seats, you got to pay $1,000. Yeah. You could get to the ballpark for $20.
What seats are those that you prefer?
We used to have front row. We used to have these. In the first base, we used to be right behind first base in the front row.
Those are expensive.
A friend of mine was a lawyer. He used to buy the tickets. They used to pool them, and everybody bought a bunch of tickets, and we'd all buy them because they were, at the time, were like $75.
Right.
And then they went to $250, I think. And then when they built a new stadium, I think they were like $1,000 each.
I could certainly entertain this, Mike, if every other sport was also not expensive. I think that all sports are ridiculously expensive for families to go. But I love it when people just pin it on baseball. Did you check the prices at Madison Square Garden for a Knick or a Ranger game? You think Citi Field is cheap? I mean, the sports all around, the prices have gotten outrageous. That's why I always laugh when fans call it, well, they should sign this guy, whatever he wants. It's going to be passed on to ticket prices. Just the way it is. So they have essentially priced out the average Joe or Jane. They have. If you want to sit in the seats that Mike's talking about. But, I mean, that's a little bit highbrow, don't you think, Peter? I can't go to a game that costs $1,000. Well, yeah, you could go to a game for $20. Oh, you want to sit right on the field? Yeah, well, that's going to be $1,000. If you want to sit in the third deck, you could see the game beautifully. That's where I grew up and fell in love with the game. Top row of the upper deck for $1.50. Now those seats are $20. That's eminently affordable in today's world.
I think he lost. I think he ended up, that argument fell apart. I think.
I like to sit in my seats. God bless you, Mike. Everybody wants to sit down there. But if they didn't have an avenue for you to go where it's reasonable at $20, I mean, you price a Broadway show? You can't go on a date in a movie anymore. The movies are pretty expensive, too. But people begrudge athletes making money, but they don't begrudge The Rock making $50 million a picture. It's weird. They don't hold that same, you know, judgment on entertainers. They just don't. Why is that, Peter? They'd have no problem with Jay-Z being a billionaire. None. But boy, if there's a basketball player or a baseball player that's a billionaire, they don't like that. Oh, they're just playing a kid's game. Well, Jay-Z's singing.
I know. Again, this argument does not make sense. We understand.
Tom Cruise makes a lot of money each picture. Nobody complains about it. Really, nobody does. But players make money. Everybody complains. Because they think every person out there thinks they could be a baseball player if things had gone a little differently. Nobody thinks they could be an actor. And let me tell you something. Probably easier to be an actor than a professional athlete. Just saying. I mean, I've been in a movie. That tells you all you need to know. I'm a hack. Buster Only joins us in just a moment. Please stay tuned for that. He'll have the latest and where this is headed right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
So if we were looking for a little positive news from Buster, he didn't have it. He didn't have it.
See you guys.
I don't know what to say. I just don't know what to say.
Not very much, because there's not going to be any baseball to talk about.
Well, we got that karaoke thing to fall back on.
That's a great point.
We'll call it karaoke, if that's okay with you.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
Don's got some in the holster already. He doesn't.
The big clubs hover, stars all look to depart.
Andrew, are you embarrassed about that, or are you cool that that's out there in the universe?
Well, I did it, so I have to be cool with it being out there. It wasn't for no one.
But you weren't here, Michael, when it came out.
Neither was I, by the way.
Oh, yeah, you weren't here either. I think I was on with Alan, and when I found this, Mike, hit it again, Anthony. Oh, my God, it makes
the big clubs hover, stars all look to depart.
Now, you would agree with me, Michael, with all due respect to Don, who's on the mend. Andrew Gunling is such a psychopath. Andrew has a better singing voice, I think, than Don.
I agree. I'm going to make a prediction about Andrew right now. I'm seeing him on the screen on Yes. He's very, very close to a trip to the barber. I mean, this is too long for him.
It was supposed to have happened already, but it got canceled, and yeah. We're in the final days of this.
Oh, yeah.
The last days.
I love when he gets buzzed down to, like, G.I. Joe level. You know, little prickly spread. Yeah.
That's a weird way of describing it, but yeah, sure. Yeah.
Look, his part is it's unkempt. He's got a piece of hair down in the middle of his part over his forehead. That's not Andrew. Andrew's clean.
No, I hate it. You're right. You're right to make fun of it. I got to get rid of it.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Matthew on the Van Wick. What's up, Matthew?
Hi, first-time caller, big fan. Just wanted to say, first of all, Buster was just a fantastic guest. I really thought that was excellent.
Yeah, he was good.
I wanted to play devil's advocate here. I am 22 years old, and when I look at my friends, what my friends are watching, I mean, football just has so much more hype these days than baseball does. I'm a massive Yankees fan. But, you know, if you look at it, you know, the sport, baseball, just needs to grow. And for the owners to add $40 million to you know, per team, you know, it eats into a lot of the revenue that they have. And if the sport isn't growing at the rate it needs to, it just may not be worth it for the owners. Now, the owners, you know, some of them are multi-billionaires. But in small market teams, you know, do they have the same capacity that you know, someone like Steve Cohen has, you know, the he might have.
No, not unless they reach into their own fortune. Because from the revenue that's produced, like in a market like Kansas City or Cleveland, the owners have to reach into their pocket. And they don't want to do that. I mean, they're willing to not make money on their team because they know the team's going to increase in value. But they don't want to lose money and actually pay out of their pocket. But I don't think that's the problem with the product. That's why the thing that's distressing to me is that the way this is going down, there's so much about the money. And I understand that's the key. But if you really care about the game has to be changed. There has to be a pitch clock. The pace of play has to change. That's just the way it is. Batters have to stay in the box. There are things that can be done. Attack the fact whether you want to shift or not. Things like that. We're not even talking about that. And again, if what Buster predicted is true, that the owners will end up routing the players because they'll, you know, just miss April or May, and then they'll get exactly what they want because the players don't have the same reserve that the owners do, well, then the players aren't going to help out then. Because if you crush them, Peter, and you ask them, well, let's change this for the good of the game, they're going to say no. Everything's going to be no. It's not going to be a collaborative effort. That's why if either side wins, but win with a modicum of dignity for the other side so that there could be a collaborative effort. That's why when GMs make trades with other teams, they don't want to completely just trash the other team and take advantage of them. They want to be able to deal with them again. They don't want to completely embarrass them. A GM gets really unnerved when he embarrasses a team because he knows that's a team that will never deal with him again. So if the players embarrass the owners, let's say, which doesn't seem like it's going to happen, the owners aren't going to be amenable to anything the players want. And then if the owners embarrass the players and the owners go to the players, go, all right, we'd like you to sign off on the 20-second pitch clock. We want you to sign off on this and that, no shift. They'll say, no, we're not doing the no shift. No, we're not doing anything for you. You had a chance. You crushed us, and now we're not going to help you at all. So nothing that's being done in Jupiter, Florida, benefits the game that people watch and love. Nothing. It's all financial. And I'm not a simp. I'm not a naive little simp. I understand this is a billion-dollar industry.
Right.
And what that last caller said, you know, why should the owners put anything in? Owners are making a lot of money. Players are making a lot of money. The owners are not in this for charity. That's why a lot of people laugh when Manfred said, well, it's not a good investment. You know what? It's a pretty good investment. When you look at some of the teams and what they're worth now and what they got bought for, it seems like it's a pretty good investment. There's a lot of good things with owning a professional sports team. So let's pump the brakes on that. The owners are not going out of business. They just want a good deal. And I don't blame them for wanting a good deal. It's a business. I don't blame the players for wanting a good deal. That's their livelihood. But there's got to be some middle point, Peter, that this thing works, that you don't have to cancel 2 months of a season. Because we're getting close to that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. Your sport annoys the hell out of me.
And you watch, Peter, if they don't have a deal by the 28th, right, which is the deadline before they start canceling games, then they're not going to be meeting all the time. Then it's just going to be stewing. And the owners will just wait patiently for the players to come back because all those paychecks, the players, they're going to start missing on March 31st. Right now, no one's missing anything. The owners are losing a little bit of money because they're not playing spring training games. Players don't get paid during spring training. Owners make some money during spring training, but it's a small pittance to them that they would get because there's going to be a spring training at some point. They're not just going to start the season. But the players will not get that money back. And that's a lot of money. We told you yesterday, if he misses one game, Max Scherzer loses $232,000. Gerrit Cole loses $197,000 for one game. So the bottom line is this. The owners are banking that those people don't want to lose that much money. So what is the resolve of the players? Right now it seems strong, but when you start losing paychecks, how strong will it be?
Right.
ENN's coming up in just a moment. Stick around for that right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.